Welcome to another episode of the Dublin Maker Podcast. I am your host, Vicky Toomey Lee, your maker advocate from the Dublin Maker team. Dublin Maker is an annual family-friendly maker festival funded by the Science Foundation Ireland. So in this episode, we have Miriam Hart and Jen Hasnan from TechSpace. We also have Tomas from Dublin Maker team co-hosting this episode with me. So welcome, Miriam, Jen, to our podcast. And I know, Miriam, we have met quite a number of times sharing our experiences between Dublin Maker and TechSpace. And a lot of things are, you know, we have a lot of things in common as well. But for our listeners, can you and Jen tell us a bit about TechSpace and what each of you do?
Sure. So thank you so much for having us, Vicky, today. It's great to chat to you guys. So within TechSpace, I am the STEAM Education Officer. So I run the STEAM programs that we have, usually through the programs that I'm working on, projects that I have. I look after educators, youth workers, anybody who wants to bring STEAM skills and STEAM engagement to young people across the country. So we work a good bit with disadvantaged youth and have some wonderful supporters, ESB and Social Innovation Fund. And we're really lucky to have a lot of people backing us so that we can, you know, really bring a lot of opportunities around STEAM to young people. And we do that through the TechSpace Network, which is basically a large network of people. We have over, I think, 800 people at this stage now who've come to a TechSpace training, and they've maybe done a training on either STEAM or digital creativity, maybe a bit of coding. And we basically have them as our champions across the country who lead on bringing new skills to young people and engaging them in the area. So they're the troopers. They're the ones bringing it out there, doing all the work.
Thanks, Miriam. And yourself, Jen?
Yeah, so much the same as what Miriam says, I suppose. The TechSpace program is it's an education program that's managed by an organization called Camara Ireland. So Camara Ireland are a social enterprise, kind of started out doing refurbished laptops and sending them out to schools in Ireland, and then quickly realized, well, it's all well and good to send equipment out to education settings, but if you don't support the educator to use them, then they very much will gather dust or not be used to their full potential. So the TechSpace program came about in 2016. I was actually a youth worker at the time in Galway, mad about video production. I'm a musician myself, so it was really interesting to bring that into my work. And then it was really, really exciting when Camara came down and did a training with us, and we just hit the ground running with it. And what I really saw as a youth worker at the time is, you know, if you can support a youth worker or a teacher to open up a space for young people to be creative using digital creativity or maker or technologies, STEM technologies, and really the sky's the limit for the young person. Because what you're doing really is just opening up that space for the young person to gain access and really broaden their own aspirations for what they can achieve based on their own interests. And so it sort of spiraled from there. I started working with Camara in 2016, and the program has grown to now be working in about 470 different youth clubs and schools around the country. A special interest of mine is I'm from the Gaeltacht, so we've been working with Gaelscoils as well. And that's been a really exciting program, supported by the Department of Culture, Heritage and the Gaeltacht and Science Foundation Ireland now as well this year. So we're really excited to be training Gaelscoil teachers. And it's so kind of, in a way for me, it's revolutionary in the sense that you're asking teachers to be non-formal in their approach, you know, open up a space for young people to be creative. You're doing it in Irish, and you're also kind of introducing these scary technology words and computers and coding to teachers who have had no training, really, no kind of formal training in these areas. So it's been really exciting. And I think a lot of this has come out of the idea of, you know, the Dublin Maker movement and the Computer Clubhouse movement. But at the time, Camara, we're looking at the networks of education across the country and going, why isn't this available for every young person? Why isn't this available for a young person in the Aran Islands, as well as a young person in, you know, a youth project down in Kildare? You know, so I think it's really, really important that at a national level, young people are getting access to these kind of scenarios, no matter what their own social background is or their living situation. So we have a really exciting team now. There's about 16 of us running around the country shouting about this. And then every year, I think what's really, really important is the network, as Miriam talked about, which is the champion educators who are taking this on board from the different organizations. So it's we're working with the likes of Feroiga, Youth Work Ireland, and TUSLAS. Miriam's doing a lot of work with the school completion programs at the moment, which is really exciting. And they're finding what they're doing is using the idea of like, let's make a film together, or let's build a robot, or let's code a game, and bringing it into their work, whatever their work is. And the commonality between that is youth development, like helping a young person to develop, you know.
I noticed that because I follow Tech Space a lot, so I saw that Irish program you're talking about was called Tech Fela, wasn't it?
Yeah, so every year for the English language program, we have this event. So, you know, there's so much happening in classrooms and youth cafes around the country. We need a way to showcase that. So every year we would have had yourselves, Dublin Maker, come along and inspire young people at a national event called ESB Creative Tech Fest. So it's, you know, awards and inspiration. 2 years ago, we worked with TG Cahir to try and come up with a way to do that in Irish, because there is no sort of Irish technology event for young people to be recognised for the types of amazing work that's going on. You know, the young people in Ireland are so talented. So we ran Tech Fela. The first year it was in LIT down in Limerick. Second year it was in the Black Box in Galway. And then this year it was in the Shannon Airport just before lockdown. So it was really, really exciting to be able to showcase the young people's work that's going on. You know, we're getting Irish language music videos, we're getting robotics and all sorts of amazing things happening in classrooms around the country. But also to give them a space to positively speak the Irish language as well. It's not just about we're here because the Irish language, it's also because we're here because we're really interested in tech or music videos or graphic design. And the Irish just became positive and just became a sort of a commonality between the young people, but it wasn't the main focus of the event. And loads of support from the Irish language industries as well, so the likes of TG Cahir, Gael Edgegas, Orna G. Because for them as well, you know, growing up in Ireland, Irish is the official language, so
it's always just been taught at school, but it never gets brought into the more, like, you know, especially the technology phases, all the, you know, all the lingo you have for the younger people. And they probably think it's very uncool to speak in Irish because you don't have the same as you same lingo as you have in English. I thought it was, like, when I saw that, I think that's amazing, because even for myself, I wanted to find out more about this technology phrases for Chinese, say. So I went on my, like, this is like separate. So the kind of, I understand, you know, when you're trying to bring what you're really interested in, but you want to connect it up to your own cultural background as well and be proud of it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we want to bring the Irish language to the masses and also, you know, make it normal to use and normal to speak it as well. So unfortunately, I'm not very good at speaking Irish, but it is. And when I saw the initiative, it was pretty cool. And it has been going on for several years. So the support must be an amazing and a great success. So hopefully it'll keep going on even with this COVID.
Well, I was going to ask on that. That's a really interesting idea, and it really emphasizes Irish as a living language. There must have been lots of fun situations and opportunities when new technical jargon was, you know, that's, you know, the words that have been invented in English, you're having to like adopt them in Irish and maybe come up with, you know, how what kind of process goes on around there where people are, I don't know, podcasting. What's Irish for podcasting, for example? Is it podcasting?
I actually know it's Pod Creolacht, and I learned it because of Tech Fela, because we had a Caerdlon Pod Creolacht. So I think I might be wrong. There'd be people all over the country. No,
it doesn't matter. That's just how the language, you know, is.
It's a living language.
Yeah, it's words are come into existence through circumstance and exposure, and through creating this sort of festival, it's really creating all these all these events and circumstances where, you know, words will be brought into the vocabulary in Irish, and new Irish and young people can use it. So it's really, that's really cool. Obviously I haven't been keeping on top of what textbooks have been doing recently. This reaching out with teachers in particular is something that I wasn't so much aware of, since the youth work angle is what I'm particularly aware of in terms of text space. So how did that come about, that kind of a broadening from youth workers to teachers?
So it started, funny enough, normally the way things work like this is something will start in English and then it'll get translated into Irish, but it actually started through the Irish language program because of the support from the Department of Culture, Heritage and the Gaeltacht. So we started to work with teachers, but then with support from ESB and Social Innovation Fund, who are now actually Rethink Ireland, they're different. Miriam has started to work in the school completion programs. And I think that that's been really, really interesting because, I don't know, Miriam, if you want to say a little bit about that.
I haven't heard about this.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, so within school completion programs, you're usually looking at workers within schools who kind of, they support young people within schools who are maybe at risk of leaving school early. And so this is often done in different schools in different ways. And it can be maybe having homework clubs, having breakfast clubs, things like that, that just kind of create more of a community. And I think more of a support system within schools as well for young people who need it. So I know throughout the course of this project that I'm working on so far, we've had a lot of interest from SCP, School Completion Programme officers, in bringing STEAM and digital creativity to the young people with whom they work, because they find that it can be very social, that creating, you know, robots or coding together and problem solving and collaboration can be a really great way of engaging with young people who are maybe going through a difficult time. And it's a much, I think, more casual way of saying, so how are things with you and how are things going at home, or, you know, what's on your mind, as opposed to just a direct question with no filter around it. And I've heard, you know, we've had stories back. We have a few groups who are doing really wonderful work. We've one in Limerick and we've one in Bray, Ballywaltrim SCP. And they've told me wonderful stories. They had training with us just almost a year ago. And since then, they've taken on, you know, all the activities that we've put out to them, all the equipment. They've become pros at it. And they've told me stories around, I know one young person who essentially wasn't planning on coming back to school in the next term, but was really into the STEAM club that they were running, was sort of given an ultimatum of, well, if you can keep doing the STEAM club, but only if you attend your classes in the next term. And he stuck around and he stayed on in his classes and got to attend the STEAM club. And, you know, it sounds like a very small thing, but I imagine hopefully for that young person that does have a long-term effect. And especially I think because we're focusing on bringing skills within to the formal education sector, it gives young people the chance to see maybe hands-on things that they're good at and creative things that they're good at that don't always fall specifically within the curriculum, but can complement a lot of it too. You know, so it really gives people and young people an opportunity, I think, to learn more about themselves and to see where their skill sets are and what they can gain from
STEAM. That's a very, I mean, that's real impact right there, just from that story.
It's lovely to hear about too for us.
And Miriam, how do you scale that out? I mean, you mentioned a few places there. Is it difficult to scale this process or what?
It can be sometimes. So something that we have definitely encountered is what we like to call tech fear. I think as Jen would have touched on, and I'm sure you guys have encountered this plenty in your own work. You know, when you've got people who are maybe trained as teachers or trained as social workers, their speciality isn't STEAM and digital creativity, and that's just fine. But when we're kind of trying to give them new things, new projects they can bring to their young people, often that fear of not being good enough or not being able to do it or saying, oh, that's not for me, is what holds them back. And we always...
Do you think that is a fear of not being the expert? Because often the kids are, yeah.
I think so too. I think it is. And I think we, you know, I'm always telling people in trainings that I don't expect them to be an expert in any of this stuff. I mean, I'm a scientist. I studied immunology and now teach people to make electronics and circuits for my job, but I don't claim to be the expert in any of this stuff either. I know a lot about it, but no one can be the expert in all of the science that's out there. But really, I think what we try and focus on is that level of empowerment that you can give young people by the person in charge saying, well, I don't know, so let's suss this out together. Let's do a bit of research. Let's ask questions. Let's see what we do know and go from there. But there definitely is a fear of not being able to do something, and yes, not being the expert. You're right.
Yeah. So that's something that needs to be broken down, or for people to become comfortable with not being the expert. It's funny, even with my my 9-year-old is an expert in Minecraft, and he gets frustrated. In fact, he doesn't even give if I'm trying to show him something, he's trying to show me something, and I'm trying to help him over something. He gets very frustrated with me because he knows it inside out, and he it doesn't seem to dawn on him at all that maybe I know a little bit about computers. No, he's the expert.
Impossible.
I'm grand with that, but I think it must be. I mean, that's what I love seeing in young people. That once they do find what they're good at, these things, they very quickly get incredible confidence. You know,
true. That is true. We lose that as adults, unfortunately.
But you do. That's the thing, of course, because we're over measured, over assessed, over ranked,
But it's also okay not to know everything, or else it'd be a very boring world, wouldn't it?
It would.
Because you wouldn't discover anything or try anything, or, you know, being scared of something is good because it's something, it's an unknown factor.
Absolutely.
And it's also a chance for everyone to explore and learn and be creative with solutions to really hard problems. And I just love the way that, you know, yes, you know, I'm not an expert in this, but let's just figure this out, because I definitely have that tech fear. I'm gonna have that like hanging over myself. I have tech fear, but let's solve this together.
This podcast is a good example of that, right?
Oh yeah, it's my first time making this podcast. All the setup, understanding how to produce it. Producing is fine-ish because I've been editing videos and audios and stuff. But you know, distributing all this, all that kind of logistics is all completely new. But you know, it'd be very, as I said, it'd be a very boring world if we knew everything and we don't have anything to learn, you know, and you just go get by. So it's good to be, I think it helps with the curiosity, and especially, unfortunately, as you get older, I think the curiosity, you know, it's kind of, you get scared of being curious, whereas you're young, you just jump into it. You know, and as I say, once you, as Thomas, you know, pointed out, you know, when a young person gets hold of something and understands it inside out, you know, they're really proud of it. It's a proud thing. It's a proud achievement. You know, and it's good that they're showing off that they learned that knowledge, and then they're trying to show you what they know, even though they think that you don't know anything, even though you do have a, you know, a little inkle of a, you know, of the, you know, say technology wise, and they say, oh, you don't know anything about technology because you're so much older or something.
We call that ownership piece. We call that the IKEA effect. So you've got your shelves that you've built from your flat pack from IKEA, and they're nothing special, but to you, the time that you've put in and probably the arguments that you've gotten through to get them there is a special thing. There's memories associated with it, and there's a level of control and ownership.
Well, there's another build up to it as well. You still have to plan, if you do plan and measure, and then the actual buying process going there. So it's a whole experience.
A lot of trauma.
It's a whole experience, and you can adapt that to a lot of the things that you're doing and what we're all doing, trying to, you know, learn about these technologies and then impart these technologies to the community, to educators, to youth workers, say, to young people, to everyone. So it is, you know, quite a challenge to figure out how to, you know, impart your knowledge to other people who want to teach others. Because that is a fear of that, oh, what if my support disappears and I'm left by myself? and how do I handle the situations when I have 20 kids all asking 50 million different questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't know how to handle it because you can't, you know, it could be a soldering issue and then you're while trying to do that, and it could be a coding issue on the other side of the room, or, you know, you get pulled. So I think that's the fear, I suppose, when it comes to managing. So how do you like handle all that, you know, when someone like, say, I suppose not an educator, maybe a youth worker, who is a coming in kind of early stages, or just getting their own set, their own group of young people to run these programs, how, apart from having people to help them out, how do they get over this hump of, oh no, everything's going to pieces, I am just gonna want to curl up and I don't know what to do? How do you prepare them?
Well, I think that really, that's where, as Jen was saying, the idea of creating a tech space network came from, so that we're not just giving people a training session and then, you know, bye, go do all this yourselves, but we're giving them the support afterwards, and sometimes that's a phone call or an email or equipment or a visit or an event like TechFest. Yeah.
I think also, like, the peer support is really, really important. So what we're seeing is at a local level, you know, Mary might help John because she tried it last week. And like, as the network grows and as we train more and more people and introduce them to these ideas, we developed something called the TechSpace Online Network. So it's like an online login forum, and that's where we'll upload all of our resources, and once people do a training, they can have access to that. But what's really cool about it is people can develop their own resources and share them on there as well. And I think that's the really important bit, because, you know, banks of resources exist. You know, you've got amazing websites out there. YouTube has anything you want to learn. So if there's a will, there's a way. Like for example, yourself, Vic, in your podcast. Like, you want to do a podcast, you'll learn all the tech around it. So if a young person wants to make a giant hologram, he'll learn that and make sure he knows how to do it. And I think for teachers, what they need is a bit of reassurance from each other, as well as, you know, we can be there to support as much as possible, but it's about sort of building a team of creative mindsets at a local level, I think, has been really, really important for us. So we've done things like facilitated learning network meetings, or taking people to Central Parks for the weekend so we can work on projects together, or, you know, just building that sort of friendship circle as well. And I think you develop creative projects together with friends because you have ideas and can bounce off each other.
Mm, so yeah, it's a social activity for sure. It's a really important part of it that's often neglected, which is why, you know, hacker spaces and tech clubs are always clubs, spaces, they're always shared. On that, Jen, in terms of, I mean, the classic element, the element in the room here is COVID, and over the past few months, you probably have had to move everything online. So that's accelerated this process that you probably have been engaged with anyway, to scale out through, you know, providing support through, you know, online resources and so on. How has that all played out?
First of all, we've seen how creative and how quick on the mark the youth sector is. Like, hats off to every youth worker around the country, because they really jumped straight in and supported young people who were at serious risk, who are maybe in like scenarios at home where they are not safe. And first and foremost, went straight into first response for that and supported young people where they were at. What we did is all of our trainings moved online. And we've spent our year, probably 2019, trying to convince people that using technology in your education practice is a good idea. And then all of a sudden, we didn't need to convince people anymore because they had no choice. Mm-hmm. So our trainings just kind of went through the roof. And Miriam had developed a really great way of delivering training, in that it was still a learn by doing event. So they were still learning by doing, but they were also looking at things like activities you could do that didn't require equipment, really, like virtual circuits and things like that. So just trying to meet people where they're at. Really exciting thing, and that I am really excited for, is ESB Creative Tech Fest is going ahead. It's in Irish and English. And it also, in a way, is because of COVID-19 and the way we're going to have to structure it this year, it means that we can reach more people than we would have in the past when it was a big event and venue. So we're still going to celebrate young people's work. We're still going to be delivering workshops. We're still going to exhibit young people's work, and we're still going to have an award ceremony, but it'll all be online. So it's a national event with a regional approach.
Lovely. And is that going to be live, or will it be pre-recorded?
Live. So there'll be a live award ceremony on the 28th, and then there'll be a virtual reality exhibition of all the young people's work. But right now, young people can enter in awards, and all the awards are live. So there's like 20 award categories: STEM, computer science, digital creativity, ESB Tech Spacer of the Year, ESB Educator of the Year. We even have a ESB Community Responder Award as well, because what we've seen as well, like, there's been some amazing young people out there that are like 3D printing masks, and like technology has really come to the forefront in terms of solutions as well, and solutions that can happen if a young person is allowed access to a technology, you know, because there's a lot of like social issues out there that are going to come out of this. And I think a lot of young people have the creative and agile mindset to actually go, well, why are we doing it that way? Why don't we try it this way? And lucky, the tech's really easy, just draw it like this. So yeah, we're really excited about Creative Tech Fest this year. ESB Creative Tech Fest.
And Miriam, given that it's apparent now that you have to put together the resources to be able to deliver the tech-based sort of approach through, you know, virtual communities and online, do you have any plans to go beyond Ireland in much the same way, like Camara, for example, is, you know, it's got a big development.
So we've been working with some amazing partners alongside the National Youth Council of Ireland at European level. So there is really inspiring youth organizations doing inspiring work across Europe, like Virke in Finland, for example. They've been doing virtual youth cafes and maker spaces for years, like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So there are people to look to across Europe. Vinextra in Vienna have like a 4-story building that's a maker space, then it has a full-on recording studio that young people can just drop in and out of, you know. And I think best practice is there, but also they've been really looking at Ireland and our approach to maker spaces and taking a lot of inspiration based on the work that we've
done. Andrea, is there something particularly distinctive about the tech-based way of doing things compared to, say, these groups in Finland and Austria and so on? What would be the crucial difference, if any?
It's the, like, Ireland is a small island and we all know each other. So I think it's the sort of building a learning community has been much easier in one way for us. And it is something that we're continuing to work with those partners. And you can see the results of it on the digitalyouthwork.eu website. There's best practice videos there from around Europe.
All right. So what's that URL again?
So digitalyouthwork.eu, okay. And there's kind of best practices, training resources there for anybody. And yeah, it's a really good resource to look at. But like what has been coming out is that sort of idea of a network and learning from each other, peer networking, but like a little bit of a structure to it as well, that we've been doing. And I suppose that constructivist approach and the creative confidence being a key part to what we do, and it's been really, really inspiring for others that we've been worked with.
Good. And I was also going to ask you on the there's a lot of kind of related activity that takes place in the community, everything from, you know, men sheds to coder dojo to, you know, hacker spaces and so on. Have you any formal means of engaging with those groups, or does it all take place ad hoc at a local level, or how do you kind of mesh up all the kind of the maker culture, which is only part of what you do, of course, but, you know, which is obviously an important kind of theme in what you do?
I think from my perspective and from my experience within my role here so far, Dublin Maker has been a really great way of meeting like-minded people and groups that are doing similar things, and also just, you know, it's lovely to see when you're plowing away through your projects and, you know, you kind of get caught in the daily back and forth and admin. It's lovely to see other people who are creating stuff in the same way that you do and making it happen through their own means and with their own communities. And I think organizations getting together in that way is an ideal way of seeing what else is happening out there.
But, right.
Okay. Yeah, but I'm not just saying that because this is the Double Maker podcast. I genuinely mean it. We've met some really wonderful people, and including yourselves, who've come along then to TechFest after us kind of working more together through Dublin Maker. So that's always a really nice way of seeing what's happening out there. And it's also quite interesting, I think, to see the different audiences that are being met and reached, because like you're saying there, Tomas, there is such a wide range. I think often the go-to is, you know, maybe schools or children, but there's far more out there. And I know that Dublin Culture Company are doing a bit around having maker spaces within Richmond Barracks. For more of a community-based.
That's a very exciting project. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. And again, I think having it as and the same as well with Fingal Libraries and having maker spaces within libraries too, and that's becoming a little bit more nationwide as well. I think seeing it as a thing that reaches the broad community is a great way of starting people off and hopefully, you know, getting people a bit curious from all ages. And that would be our way of kind of keeping connected nationally and meeting people as well. For me anyway, that's usually how I've met.
Okay, so no pressure, we must keep
no, not at all.
On the road. Vicky.
But it's great to see. The main thing I like from all this is just making a lot of these technologies and activities accessible to people, and you are providing that for a lot of the educators and the youth workers and of course the young people as well. And then it's great to see other public services, like the libraries, are starting to create these spaces to, instead of being thought of a place to just rent out books or DVDs or a place to do your homework, you can actually do more creative and maker activities. And plus, not everyone has, as you say, like when you were saying that you're running activities that people may not necessarily have the equipment. But some activities may need, you know, some 3D printing. You want to learn about that, but they might have that at home, and it's great to, and it's probably a good way to share all this information, you know. And it's great to see public services coming online to provide some of these, you know, accessible to these kind of type of high tech kind of stuff that people don't normally find at home, and also as a safe space. So it's great that like in each and every different area, everyone's doing a lot of stuff together and we're making things accessible, and that's what, you know, which is amazing, because it's, you know, it's reaching to the people who are on the outskirts, who are always looking in, and giving, as you say, you're giving the opportunity to the kids who may not finish school and never see, you know, what a Raspberry Pi is or code or anything. Like that's not something for me, but you give youth an opportunity to try things out. If they like it, they like it. If they don't, it's fine, but at least the opportunity was there to try, and it's within a safe environment as well, and conducted by trained people, and everyone is learning at each and every different level, and everyone benefits from it. So it's like, it's amazing what you're doing as well, and being connected with community like the maker community itself. It's just so much out there, but I think that's what we wanted to do with this podcast, is to highlight each of different kind of areas of what people are doing and what you are doing, all the good work, and the reason why making and creativity and crafting, you know, it does not necessarily mean you have to have high tech stuff. You can use things like even with paper, pens and stuff, and start from there, you know, making card games, you know, but you can do that, and you start making games that are cooperative or something like that, and you start teaching different skills. Kids, as you mentioned before, that have have decided saying, I want to do something because COVID-19 is, want to help the health workers, you know, with the masks and 3D printing or even learning to sew masks. And these are young people. And it's just amazing seeing all these stories. And it was their own initiative. And they're contributing to society and they, without even knowing, instead of us saying you have to contribute to society and benefits, they're doing it on their own. And given the opportunities, the ideas are coming out of the young people, it's a fantastic opportunity that we're all providing in all different levels, and hoping we can actually do, all great minds come together, and hopefully, you know, we can do a lot more cool stuff. So what do you think, Tomas?
Yeah, I was just gonna, that absolutely, talking about minds coming together and something that Miriam and Jen mentioned there about, you know, at Dublin Maker, you know, they arrive there and they see all these different groups and that they mightn't have been aware of in terms of what they're doing. It made me think that, you know, many of us have a kind of a common ancestor in the maker space in terms of an event or organization that might have inspired us. And for me, it was my first exposure to this sort of kind of culture actually predates kind of formal maker culture for quite a few years. And that was the Computer Clubhouse associated with Media Lab Europe. And I think, Miriam and Jen, you would have an association with that as well. Am I right?
Yeah. So actually,
we've been commonly inspired by that. Yeah. That was about 2002, three.
A lot of it, if you take it back again, then for the last 2 years, we've been working with the National University of Ireland Maynooth to run the Level 8 certificate in digital creativity.
With Hilary Tierney.
Yeah. It's been a really amazing opportunity for us to delve deeper into the theory that's behind what it is that we're doing. And a lot of the the Computer Clubhouse, but then there's also Scratch. So probably my first exposure to it was the idea of Scratch, and then also Coder Dojo, because that would have happened in and then we had 091 Labs at the time in Galway, and text based at the time was quite early stages for me, but it all kind of spans from the Mitch Resnick, David E. Kelly, the MIT.
Yes, absolutely.
Like you said, a lot of it is coming out of MIT Media Labs. But what was really exciting at the very early stages of us implementing the text-based program down in the Galway Youth Services, we went up and visited the Computer Clubhouse, the Feroiga Computer Clubhouse in Blanchardstown, and Swickin Computer Clubhouse in Dublin 8. And they're still both very much involved and in the text-based network at the moment. You know, we have young people winning awards from those clubhouses every year because in one way, they're the kind of dream, you know, so they're the full-time funded youth project and a drop-in for young people to come in, have access to equipment, have access to trained educators and have a space whereby even if they don't want to make something, that they can be in an environment where they can if they want to. Do you know what I mean?
And that's Swickin Clubhouse in particular, and we must have mentioned one at some point. That was a transformational time for me, anyway, as a mentor there, because we were also working in Media Lab Europe at the time. So, and it just goes to show, you know, would that have happened if we hadn't had that kind of impetus from the people at Media Lab Europe to make that happen? I don't know. It probably eventually would have happened, but. You know, it just goes to show it takes some people to have a bit of funding and resources and a vision to change things, you know. I think that certainly was a really important place.
There's some really cool books out at the moment. Actually, the one of the ones on the course we've been recommending is The Lifelong Kindergarten.
That sounds great.
Good.
I have a load of a lifelong kindergarten. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Mitch Resnick's new book. And then there's also the Creative Confidence book by David E. Kelly as well. But like they've been really underpinning that whole idea of play and, you know, make, create, reiterate, take it apart again. And the learning spiral, you know, so this idea of imagining something, playing with it, taking it apart, reiterating it, trying again. And I think that those theories are very simple to say, but they have huge potential for impact in the education sector. And I can see even in the Irish formal education sector, Department of Education is starting to recognize constructivism as an idea, mm-hmm. that idea of learning by doing as something that is really integral to how a young person develops and learns. And we're starting to work as well with the new junior cycle for teachers. And they are really interested in this idea of teaching someone to learn. So learning how to learn.
Absolutely. I think that's what we have to do now, because, you know, the half-life, particularly in computer science, for example, the half-life of anything we might teach our students is probably about 12 to 18 months. So we really have to try and teach them to learn as they go, because, you know, some, you know, having I mean, that's the most important skill that we now have to equip people with at all ages, you know, from young kids up to much older adults. We have to learn to learn.
And even to experiment outside of your core, say if you're going through school and college, being able to experiment more so in third level, because the students tend to be in a bubble more. Whereas if you're primary and secondary school, kids can still do stuff on the outside, and they tinker and do lots of different things. But as you get a bit older, like the students in third level tend to end up being in a little bubble and just do the core stuff. Yeah. I keep telling them, do different things outside, extracurricular, could be interesting, really cool stuff, you know.
I definitely agree with you, Vicky. We've done a small bit of work with Bernardo's, and we're hoping that we can do more on it around kind of the empathy of STEAM and the idea around communicating what you're doing with empathy. So you're thinking of, what does the other person know about this? How am I communicating this? How am I collaborating with other people based around what their level of knowledge is, as opposed to what my level of knowledge is, which might be, you know, higher or in a different place.
Can I take that workshop?
Yeah, it's a lovely idea, the empathy of STEAM.
We'll hopefully be able to do more on it, but I think it would be something that would be really great to delve into, because we've done a lot of work around the failure within STEAM, which is, you know, copious. There's loads and loads of it, and we learn a lot from it, and we hopefully get a bit of a confidence boost from it too, because, you know, those challenges, when you overcome them, give you that extra boost in what you're doing. So we've done a lot on failure, and actually I think it was at the Festival of Curiosity last year, I saw one of the speakers from 21 Toys, and they do a lot of work on empathy and a lot of work on failure. And they've kind of got little activities around that too, and projects that they have. So I think I've looked a little bit at how we can bring just that mindset and even just touch on it for people at our trainings to be aware that this is a whole other aspect of what you can do. And
I think that is where you can go. Definitely for real, especially when we go back to the earlier conversation of how you're not the expert in everything, and it is okay to make mistakes. Especially if you're running something and you're writing code and things never work out. It's like, I'm not an expert. Here, I can show you. You end up opening up your web search for how to fix things, and then things still doesn't work. It's good to see those kind of breaks, but not too long. I don't know, but it's why you good to have know that you have the assistance of someone maybe eyeing, say, hey, there, you're missing. You did a typo there or something like that, or, you know, think something like that. But yeah, it all kind of gels together where, you know, it's accept the failures as well, understanding that. And it is important that whoever you are teaching these activities or these programs to, that you understand that you are still human. And we all do make mistakes, but we learn from them every time. There's always going to be something different that crops up, no matter how well prepared you are. From my past experience, things always go wrong, kind of, you know, and you learn from that experience, you know. But
I agree. I think, you know, we're used to having all this technology for us and a lot of things being automated. And one of the things that we definitely focus on within Tech Space is to teach young people to, you know, be creators of technology as opposed to just to consume technology. But with that, it's like, you know, with great responsibility, with great power comes great responsibility. It's that thing of, yes, you can gain great things and create great things with it, but there can be failures along the way and you can overcome those, but it may take a little bit of time. And
it's okay to have these failures.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It may be frustrating, you know, but it can be sometimes a little bit, you know, I think it kind of brings people down a few pegs as well, because, you know, might be too, you know, ego might be flying a bit high, but, you know, it's good to have a bit of humility, especially when you're doing a lot of activities I definitely know around electronics, because I'm still trying to learn it, and it's, you know, it's a lot of bumps along the way, but it's so satisfying when it works, even if it's a tiny little thing. It works, what I was told. If it doesn't work, it'll just, you know, be very annoying, it doesn't work, but when it works, it just works like a dream. You know, it's just like an on-off switch on electronics.
One of the things that we actually were speaking about in the course recently was, you know, the best thing you can do as an educator is actually say to a young person, well, I don't know. Let's find out.
Mm. I must be one of the best educators out there.
Brilliant. You just kind of fall on their bluff. But it is a great thing to be able to do. And even when we're supporting people to structure their session plans or their lesson plans or program plans, you know, you might have the first day is just looking up really cool things on YouTube together.
Yeah.
And get a bit of inspiration, or, you know, the second day might be like, okay, what do you want to do? Let's try and find out how we do it.
Explore and be curious. And if you don't know something, don't be afraid to look it up.
Or ask.
Yeah.
And speaking of asking, I wanted to ask you a quick question. What's your favorite piece of technology now that you find is really useful for in this educational setting, or what do teachers seem to gravitate towards, or youth workers? Is there anything exciting out there? Like for me personally, just to get this going, I've been really taken with the Microbit. I love Microbits. So small, so easy, plug them in, off you go, expandable, you know, it beats Arduino for me even, you know, anything like that for you?
Microbits are really lovely to work with. I like them a lot too. They're fun, and, you know, you can make them as basic and as scaled back or as advanced as you want. They're great stepping stones as well, depending on where you want to go with them. I don't know, I'm kind of old school in that I always love soldering projects. I find a lot of people don't get the chance to learn to solder and think that there's no way they'll be able to do it, that it's a very hands-on and technical thing to do. But once you get the hang of it, and as Vicky was saying, you've created a piece of technology that works.
Yeah. But definitely, it works when you solder something. It doesn't.
It will. Jeffrey Rowan, Double Maker, this would be music to his ears.
But I don't know, there's just something really lovely about building a piece of an electronic device that does, even if it's just switching on a light, when you turn on the switch, it's just nice to do. And it's, again, a skill that you may not normally come into contact with in more traditional avenues. And it's, I think for some people, they really like to be able to do that and to bring it to their young people as well. And I also just personally find soldering quite therapeutic.
It's the fumes, is it?
Maybe, yeah, it could be.
Yeah, I think for me, I've been really interested in that sort of that augmented reality field, where you're kind of combining technology into reality. So and bringing it off the screen.
How do you make that accessible? You know, obviously you can get pretty hardcore into that. Or is there any accessible platforms or tools?
So I've been looking at a software called HeavyM, which is really good.
HeavyM.
Yeah, so you can download a trial version of it. We've run a couple of training sessions on it in the course as part of our emerging technologies work that we're doing. So some of the training we're doing is emerging technologies, and again, like, I mean, I think the life cycle on that is probably a week, but I mean, the core fundamentals of sort of holography and projection never change. You know, so I think there's loads of, you can teach somebody the fundamentals of projection and then talk about 3D design and projection mapping. So I've been looking into a lot of that kind of projecting, like how do you exhibit a young person's work, like a young person's film. So do they build a sculpture and then project their film onto it?
Oh, yeah. Actually, we had a lot of fun with those AR sandboxes. I mean, those augmented reality sandboxes. You know, you project onto sand, you can create a kind of a you know, like a landscape.
It's physical sand, isn't it? And you
Yeah,
project,
it is.
and as you move the sand, I think I saw this exhibition in the Berlin Game Science Center or something.
We had it at Dublin Maker 2016.
That's
So
probably where I initially saw it before as well, because you dig a hole and the water comes out, right? And you fill it up and it becomes hills and stuff,
Yeah,
and it's all
so
projected.
exactly. So that's an early AR sort of interactive exhibit.
Whoa.
So,
Yeah,
Jen, is
that
that what
kind
you're
of
talking about?
sensory stuff. Like, I mean, I think some libraries are actually starting to install like, the interactive sensory tables and things. But I love
Oh,
the idea
yeah.
of being able to just use an old school projector that you have at home, and
Yeah.
like your lap plug it into your laptop, and then all of a sudden you can like make your house come alive on the outside, or do all this kind of
Actually,
exciting
that's a good use
mind
of
technology.
for upcycling old projectors, isn't it?
Yeah,
Really,
there's a
that
lot of technology out there, and like I love the idea of soldering. And actually, with microbits, we've been doing things like toy take aparts and then making your toys come alive, which is really creepy
Oh, that's cool.
and also very exciting. But yeah, like trying to get a microbit hooked up to an old tractor and creating a tractor bot out of it and things like
That's
that.
a great
Yeah,
idea. Yeah.
it's been really exciting, cool projects like that. And because we work with Kamara Ireland, it comes out of that idea of social enterprise, but also like, the life cycle of technology from a consumer point of view is usually quite low. So what
Yeah, it's
happens
very
going
short and
on?
it's just not sustainable.
No,
It's
it's
just
not. No.
not a sustainable
So
way of
we need
doing
to
things.
learn about the fundamentals of things to understand and mix and remix.
Okay, well, there's some great tips for us,
Yeah.
Vicky. We'll think about
I
some of
know
these.
I think I just came across something where someone I think it's one of the many, many newsletters I signed up to, and one of them was actually how to the laptops, they get broken and stuff, but the little webcam, you can actually salvage that and use that as well. Or you can actually salvage the whole display. Display is not broken. And someone figured out there's only so many, was it just over half, maybe it doesn't, don't take my word on it, but there's only so many ways you connect
Oh yeah, I've seen this, yeah.
the laptop display to your laptop. So if you understand, if you have all the different ways of connecting the connectors for your laptop screen, you can use that as your, you can throw away the, salvage whatever you can from your laptop itself, but the display itself, you can actually use it for other portable projects you're using. So it's a way to kind of reuse your own machine, or just grab the little webcammy thing off, your laptop display. So there's like lots of things like this where you can salvage, instead of just chucking your machine, into re the whatever, the electrical recycling, thing that you have in wherever recycling centers. If you don't
There's
want.
a story on that. There's a story on that where two young people from I think it was Fergus Blanchardstown Computer Clubhouse came to Dublin Maker, and they had taken apart a computer display and put it into a suitcase and made a, like a little kind of ad hoc arcade game.
That's right,
Like
that was
amazing,
super.
Vicky. Yeah, and then for that Creative Tech Fest, so that was their sort of prototype, and then for Creative Tech Fest they got their computer display that they'd taken out of an old computer, and they built an old school arcade machine out of plywood. And I mean, the thing, it looks amazing, but like they
It
won an
was,
award for
yeah,
it.
I saw that at Tech Fest too. They did a great job.
Yeah.
And it was a big hit at the Dublin Maker. I remember that. It was a nice sunny day, unlike this July.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful July, Dublin Maker.
But
Really
yeah,
did.
there's so many ways to kind of I suppose even just the old tech that people think of, like we don't have, like say in the US, I know there's a crowd I'm following, and they go to place where people just throw away stuff, and you can just go, it's like it's not a dump, it's basically you just go and find what they're like, old monitors, old CRT displays, old laptops, old machines. You can just grab them because they're thrown away, they're just dumped. And you can just bring them back and salvage it yourself, we don't really have that sort of here, like we're as a salvaging thing, like in the Far East, like in China and Hong Kong, you can they'll take apart the bits and pieces, and you can just go and find your bits and pieces to build your machine again, or build your whatever project again, things like that. We don't really have that in Ireland. I think we're probably too small as well. But maybe we should bring that up again in Dublin Maker and see if we can upcycling
Upcycling.
stuff that you find, especially we're stuck in our houses all the time now, or apartments or our own places, so and people are starting to come back out. But yeah, there must be you know, people are probably more concerned about the environment, you know, things they buy a lot. And there's only so many hand-me-downs you give to people, you know, so many people in the family or friends. And you start build up, you know, all the tech kind of first world problem issues, but it can be, you know, but maybe made more aware. And and especially maybe it'd be a great project as well. And it can give ideas to organizations as well, saying, hey, what can we do with activities? And with all this gear we have that we don't use, how do we actually use that and maybe make it a part of an activity or part of a program that, you know, so have a challenge to see what kind of things you can make out of this, you know, repurpose all these things. And then show it a double maker, or show it, you know, a tech fest, or show it at whatever, like, you know, but it's a challenge.
I'll throw it up on YouTube.
It up on YouTube. Yeah. You know, Instagram it and everything. Yeah. So, go and do that. I think, we're coming to the time and,
Another event.
Yeah.
So
what I'll, I want to ask is, Miriam and Jen, if you have, do you have a kind of announcements or shout outs?
So the ESB Creative Tech Fest is live. Awards are live and any youth organization can get involved. So if you go to www.techspace.ie and click on ESB Creative Tech Fest, you can enter in one of the 20 award categories that are live there in the field of STEAM, computer science, digital creativity. And what I would say is, like, all projects welcome, because any project that is entered into the ESB Creative Tech Fest Awards this year will be part of a national exhibition, which will be accessible in a virtual reality. So I think first and foremost, like, if you have creative projects you're working on, let us hear about them and see them and celebrate them.
And is there an eligibility criteria for that? Is that like for just kids under 12 or under 18 or what?
Under 18. Yeah, at the moment it's under 18. Well, it's associated with all of the youth organizations around the country. So, and the best thing at the moment, because we're in COVID-19, there is a model release form to make sure that you have consent to enter the enter the award. And so your parent can sign that. So at the moment, parents can support young people to enter in for the projects. But we are opening it out to youth organizations and schools around the country.
All right, so all the schools are aware. So you'll get entries from all sorts of schools at all sorts of levels and so on.
Yeah, at the moment it's mainly like youth organizations and Gaelic schools we're working with, and that are a part of the network. So there's you know, there's a lot there, but we are welcoming any awards or any projects young people in Ireland are working.
Super, that's great.
Yeah, so it's techspace.ie for that. And then also, if anybody would like training in their youth organization or school, we are there and we are.
That's at techspace.ie as well.
Techspace.ie. And also we have equipment as well. So you can get support with us from equipment, laptops, hardware, starter kits, screenware, 3D printers, all of those things. So good. The great thing about that is if you purchase equipment from us, it goes back into our education and training function, because we are not for profit. So you're supporting us to support more people.
Well, that's a really nice idea. I actually wasn't aware of that. So now I am. I will be sharing that as opportunities arise. Very good.
And that's the end of this week's episode with Miriam and Jen from TechSpace. Remember to hit subscribe to our podcast. You will find it on doublemaker.buzzsprout.com. We've also posted our podcast on our website, doublemaker.ie. Don't forget, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So take care, stay safe, and this is Vicky signing off from the Doublemaker podcast.